Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
And we are back after the weekend.
Yeah. What did you do this weekend?
Let's see. I actually went on a picnic for my friend's birthday.
Ooh,
it was really nice at the Silver Lake Meadow.
Oh, that's very hipster.
It was,
you guys, Silver Lake in LA is like hipster HQ.
I literally saw someone there that had a waxed handlebar mustache and was wearing a vest, and it was like 90 degrees. Like,
I actually told Nick this weekend, before I moved to LA, I lived in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I moved in like September 2015, like right before like the height of the primary.
Right.
I told Nick, I was like, I'm so glad I didn't live in Williamsburg.
No.
During the primary and the election, because it's Bernie Bro Central
HQ.
But Silver Lake is a lovely neighborhood.
It's lovely.
It's really fun to go out in and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you do this weekend?
Well, I got a library card. That was like the high of my weekend. You guys, this is what happens when you are like 29 pushing on 30.
Yeah, you're like, I got a library card.
No, it felt really good. We, my boyfriend and I live right by a park that has a library
That's really nice.
And I just love it because I love reading long articles, long reads, but I haven't read a book in a while.
I know.
Like, I used to be really into reading books.
Me too.
I really, you know, it's a great way to support sort of the local services of the government.
Absolutely.
But also, you know, I don't have to spend a whole ton of money on books, money that I don't really have right now.
So totally.
So it's just a win-win.
It's a win-win.
But that was the highlight of my weekend because I'm super cool.
Yeah. What did you check out from the library?
So I checked out recipe books.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
I did. I made some pesto last night. I'm still not hungry.
Yeah.
It was very filling.
You and my mom should talk about going to the library and checking out recipe books because that's amazing.
It's maybe not something a 30-year-old always does. That's okay. But I also really wanted to, I don't know if this branch has it, but I really want to get Malcolm Nance's book.
Mm-hmm.
The Plot to Hack America, I think is what it's called.
It's so good. If your library doesn't have it, they'll order it for you from another branch.
Good to know.
And it takes a couple of days.
Good to know. Well, yeah, so that was my weekend.
It was a good weekend.
Should we get into what we're going to discuss today?
Yes. Okay, so first, as always, we're going to start with some listener feedback and general updates. Then we're going to go into Trump bullshit. Again, that's just the whole segment.
Evergreen.
Then we are kind of starting a new block type. We are going to talk about the New York Times climate deniers first column.
Yeah.
And sort of unpack that and talk about like
feminist issues
around that and why that happened and why that sucks.
And how we feel. Just all of our feelings.
Yeah, we have a lot of feelings. and then we go to the gratitude check, which is
always needed.
And then it's Monday. So we are going to, quote, award the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery.
Yeah.
And Sarah texted me this morning and was like, can we just give it to Donald Trump because he's a dickwad? And I'm like, that's cheating. That's like when I wanted to give it to Maxine Waters. She's like, you can't do that.
You're saying when we wanted to give the Maxine Waters award in badassery. Just
to Maxine.
Clarify.
Sorry.
Yes.
I felt that was...
Not that anyone would think that, but just, you know.
Just so we're clear. And then last, we have sort of a new block type two that we're going to try to integrate at the very end called action items. Things that are going on, elections, things to keep your eye on.
Yeah. You know, usually during our regular blocks, we'll sort of like...
Weave them in,
but we want to do a separate block and just really highlight those things that we want people to take action on.
Yeah, give you something to do after you listen.
Yes. Okay, Devin, let's get into some listener feedback and general updates. So what do we got?
Well, first, we got a tweet from a listener, Emily, and she said, quote, Hellbent has given me the courage to confidently speak out on politics and challenge mansplainers.
Yeah, I love this.
Me too.
We've heard this kind of feedback a few different times, and it's honestly one of my favorite bits of feedback.
It's why we do this. Like, that's the best part.
Yeah, I mean, because women are just socialized to be agreeable, to not ruffle feathers, to keep the peace at all costs, and like even when we're being talked down to.
Yeah.
So it just warms my heart, and I just love that we can give women that extra little boost of confidence to push back on bullshit and dickwads and to believe in like our own intellect.
Exactly.
Like, we know what we're talking about.
Right.
We just have a different perspective often.
Exactly.
Oftentimes.
And like believe that what you're saying matters, even if the person you're talking to doesn't seem to think so.
Right. So awesome, Emily. Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
And keep pushing back
on
those dickwads.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At Simple Wonder One, she tweeted us and she said, in regards to our last episode, mm-hmm. she said that racist, sexist Fox News douche that I can't even remember his name, which editors note it's Jesse Waters.
Yeah.
She said he was in Chinatown in New York City, not San Francisco. So the segment we were referring to, I thought it was taking right. place in San Francisco. And she was like, nope, it was in New York.
Right.
So thank you for that correction mm-hmm. On the city. And then at Absinthe, which is just a great Twitter name, said, consider adding to your swag for sale a magnetic bumper sticker. So, Devin, yeah. do you want to talk about all the merch we're finally going to be adding
yes.
that we've been talking about for a while?
Yes, we have been talking about. We're finally, like, organized and we're ready to do this. So, in the next few days, we will be releasing Dickwads Be Gone t-shirts, totes, and mugs.
Yes. Evergreen.
Evergreen. I'm also looking into a non-snapback Hellbent logo baseball cap, and I had no idea there was a hot snapback versus not snapback debate in the world.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know either. Yeah. I mean, I know snapbacks are like really big right now.
Yeah, that's why I picked a snapback.
I'm just not a big hat person,
I don't know.
So I wouldn't know like the dynamics of that.
I look awesome in hats.
Oh, man, see,
I don't look
great in hats or sunglasses, but I'm trying. I'm really trying.
I'm going to update the Hellbent logo zip-up hoodie. It's a little awkward right now. I'm redesigning it. Also, pins on pins on pins.
Yes.
Mostly for me and my girl Lindsay, because we love pins.
Yeah.
We talk about it a lot, like, it's, yeah.
Live in a pile of pins. It,
pretty much. And then at the end of this week or early next week, I've got Martha merch.
Martha merch.
So hashtag not your secretary, t-shirts, totes, and mugs. So I keep a running list of merch ideas from you guys. And thank you so much for all the ideas. And I'm definitely working to implement some of like the favorites and our favorites. So
yeah. And if you guys also want to see a magnetic bumper sticker like our friend at Absinthe suggested, mm-hmm. let us know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just tweet us, email us, or mm-hmm. if you're in the Facebook group, you know.
Yeah, we're always around.
Always around.
Yeah, and if you subscribe to our newsletter at hellbentpodcast.com/newsletter, you can look for a special merch deal because you're so fucking awesome.
Yeah, and we're sending our first newsletter out on Tuesday.
Yeah, so tomorrow.
Yeah, so if you go to hellbentpodcast.com/newsletter, you can sign up for the newsletter, and like Devin said, you get all kinds of fun content and mm-hmm. merch deals.
Yep.
And then the other bit of feedback we got, so we asked you guys in the last podcast, and then we also posed this question in the Facebook group, if you would prefer for us to stick to top news items and analyze those through a feminist lens, or if you want us to make sure we prioritize more obviously at the forefront feminist stories.
Right. And we actually got a bunch of different reactions on this.
Right.
So some people said that they really learn a lot with the news that we cover, and they'd like to see more obviously some feminist stories, but they really learn a lot from our news coverage.
Yeah. And someone said, I can't remember exactly, but they said, you know, just the fact that it's two women talking about
right.
politics is kind of a radical thing in
right.
and of itself, because it's so dominated by white men.
Dude, yes. So, you know, we do want to cover more obviously feminist stories and bigger topics.
Yeah, because there were definitely some people who were like, I'd love to hear this discussion.
Yes.
Like that, you know, that's something I'm super interested in.
Right. So we're going to try to prioritize like one or two of those stories per episode. We're kind of trying that out today.
Right.
And then while still top line. The news.
Yeah. And then the rest of the news items that we still want to cover will go on Patreon.
Right.
So there will just be more content on Patreon from the top news items. So we're trying a little bit of a different thing today.
Yep.
So let us know what you think. We're, you know, super flexible. There's plenty of different ways we could go
Absolutely.
About it. And I think that there's unfortunately, there's so much content
right.
that we really could go a few different ways.
But, Absolutely.
Just FYI, the topics on Patreon this week is... Kansas knows why Trump's tax plan sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
they
a
do.
Story on that. The Office of Government Ethics is...
I wrote this.
Devin wrote this. Is crawling up Trump's appointees' butts. So basically, they're coming after the Trump administration being like, hey, we need to see some information here.
Yep.
Rex Tillerson wants to cut over 2,000 positions from the State Department. So
yep.
we're going to talk about those implications. And then we're going to talk about Sebastian Gorka leaving the White House and how he shouldn't have fucking been there in the first place because he's a goddamn Nazi.
He's a goddamn Nazi, guys.
And there's still Nazis in the White
like,
House.
Like, proven Nazi. Like,
yeah.
not even like you're not, like, there's documentation.
Right. And then the last story is Trump's meeting with a bunch of teachers.
And he manages to disrespect a room full of our top educators.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, why not? Like, Trump's always looking for new groups to piss off.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
uh-huh.
That's great.
Yep. The other update we want to give
yes.
is our Patreon $10 contributors. So at the end of every month, or the beginning of a new month, we sort of give a shout out to all the $10 contributors from the previous month on Patreon. Okay, so thank you to Katie O'Connor,
Andrea Hidalgo,
Kristen Colleen,
Elizabeth Hanner,
Joyce Angelos,
Rachel Bost,
Maria Soriano,
Courtney Weber,
Randall Jada Lang,
Mary Rose DeGroot,
Cynthia Breckenridge,
Rachel Lithwaite,
Vishal Pagani,
and Tanya Rojas.
So thank you to all you guys.
You.
And thanks to everyone who has contributed on Patreon. You know, we're going to put all your names on our website. If you go to hellbentpodcast.com/support, all the $10 contributors are on there. And then also we'll be picking the winner of a 30-minute Skype session. So we're going to do a random drawing every month for $10 patrons. And above. One of you will, $10 and above, and one of you will get a Skype session with us if you want.
If you want.
If you don't want.
You can turn us down.
That's totally cool, too. Yeah. If you're like, this is not a prize.
Right.
Like, totally fair.
Totally fine. But so keep an eye on your email.
Yeah.
And we also picked a name for our newsletter.
We did, you guys. We're kind of nervous.
We're really nervous to tell you.
So we put a poll in the Facebook group, and this actually took third.
This took third place.
Yeah. But we're going to pick Raising Hell.
Yeah.
We, Devin and I, we really liked the top winners.
Yes.
Like, and it really did make us seriously reconsider.
Yeah.
So we just want to make, we just want you guys to know your input is valued. But ultimately, we went with Raising Hell.
Yeah.
Because it just felt like a newsletter name to us just felt right.
Right.
Sometimes you just have to go with your gut. And sometimes, you know, leaders do things that are unpopular all the time. Not that I'm calling us leaders. I'm just saying. And this is like not a serious thing. This is just a newsletter.
This is just
name.
A newsletter. So
but the top vote winner in the Facebook poll was Hell or High Water. And we very seriously considered it.
Yeah.
I actually texted my sister because she voted for it. And she's like, I am like so committed to this name.
Yeah.
Like, you need to pick it. And I was like, what was it about that? And
yeah.
She was like, I don't know. I just liked it. So like, she was like, it was just catchy. I was like, I know. It was really good. But Raising Hell just felt right. So
feminist agenda. Raising Hell.
Raising Hell. So that's the newsletter. Keep an eye out for it on Tuesday. And again, thank you to all of our Patreon contributors.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's really helpful to, like we said, to have people support us because it helps us cover all of our base operating costs and helps us, you know, take this podcast even further.
Okay, Sarah. So let's get into some Trump bullshit.
Like we said, it's evergreen.
It's evergreen.
It's never going to go away.
Yep.
We're
so,
going to keep talking about it.
What do you have for us?
Okay, so the first story I want to talk about is the rally he did instead of going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
So a fucking baby.
He's, like we've said before, he's a fucking man-child. So he went to Pennsylvania to sort of, quote-unquote, rally his base. I mean, he hasn't stopped doing rallies.
No.
Like, but anyway, he skipped the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which is, like, pretty unprecedented slash unprecedented.
Right.
So he, you know, unsurprisingly, went after the news media pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, he was like, I'm so glad to be away from Washington and the swamp. I'd rather spend my time with you, my people.
Which is just not true. I mean, if you know anything about Trump, it's that he, something that is deeply driving him is to be, like, sort of accepted and respected among, quote-unquote, elite circles.
Absolutely. That's why he lives in a literal gold-plated tower. At least he did.
Because
he wants to be that person.
Basically, the reason he ran for president is because he craves adulation.
Right.
And no one actually from those circles respects him, right?
Right.
And there were, you know, Nazis at his rally because, of course, they were.
Yes. Duh.
You know, hashtag populism, which I love. Actually, one of our listeners, Britton, she tweeted this recently. She said, "Dear every journalist, stop using quote unquote populist to mean quote appeals to racists and stop using quote ordinary people to mean quote white people."
Yeah.
Which I just feel like sums it up.
It really does.
Like, populist just seems like such a euphemism.
It is.
What about him is actually like, quote unquote populist?
I also read something really interesting about how populist is like a hard term to pin down.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have its own ideology.
It's almost something that just means whatever you want it to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. It's a good placeholder.
And we've talked about softening the discourse.
Yes.
That's another way it feels like this discourse has been softened.
Absolutely. actually. So he really held a divisive tone throughout his speech.
Unsurprisingly. This has always been who he is.
Yeah. I mean, former presidential advisor and senior CNN political analyst David Gergen called the remarks deeply disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, he literally read this ridiculous, wild, gross, creepy poem about a snake biting its host, and then he dedicated it to anti-immigration police. It was just really creepy and derogatory as fuck.
It really was.
I think he was calling immigrants the snake.
Yes, I believe he was.
And talking about basically how unsafe the metaphor was how unsafe immigration is. And it was just really, really, really gross.
It was
really
so gross. Creepy. I hated it. Yeah. And then Tony Posnansky said, quote, "Trump got a crowd to cheer that they are losing healthcare and are paying for a wall that was previously told Mexico would pay for."
Yeah. And which we'll get into, by the way, because he doesn't even have wall funding.
Yeah.
Congress did not include that in the budget. But still,
you.
I feel like Joy Reid had this perfect summary.
She always has the perfect summary.
Yeah. So because... Trump made all these campaign promises, and obviously none of them are working out.
Yeah.
Thank God,
literally none of them.
But
he's
all
done
the things
nothing.
He promises, quote-unquote, base, the courts are striking it down, he can't move anything to Congress. But Joy Reid had this great summary that I feel like I said, sums it up at all. She said, "What's amazing about Trump is how easily sated his core supporters are. He can completely BS them without worrying they'll ever question him. Trump says he's done more in his first 100 days than Truman? Absurd. But his supporters will repeat that at your workplace tomorrow. It's as if none of the failures of the last 100 days have happened at all. More proof this isn't about policy. It's purely emotional. This is not politics. It's something between entertainment, emotional release, and ethno-nationalistic civic religion."
I mean, it's so true. And that's also, it really points to why Democrats are not going to win these voters over.
Nope.
And trying to do so is a waste of our fucking time.
Yeah, I saw someone tweet out an interview on ABC News with a Kentucky Trump supporter.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I would have died without Obamacare." And then, but knowing that Trump is trying to repeal Obamacare, he's like, "I'd still vote for him."
Yeah.
That is in one tweet. That illustrates why we are wasting our time trying to go after these voters.
It's absolutely bananas.
Yeah, and another thing. So Sarah Sanders, who's his principal deputy press secretary, she was at the rally. She mm-hmm. tweeted, quote, "Secretary Ross," so again, Wilbur Ross keeps coming up.
Fucking Bank of Cyrus.
Yeah. She says, "Secretary Ross talks to supporters and signs autographs in Pennsylvania. Glad to have him helping POTUS, hashtag MAGA."
Oh.
And pollster Matt McDermott pointed out, he said, both this tweet, from an official White House staffer and the act it's depicting, mm-hmm. so a cabinet secretary electioneering, are obvious Hatch Act violations. But in any other administration, that would be bananas.
Right.
But this is just
a side item.
Yeah. A side item. It's something that just happens.
Right. And then just today, this fucking morning.
Yeah, I had to update this section. Yeah. I was like, so he said three bananas things.
Right.
Today.
She was in the lift and she was like, "I'm updating the outline."
Yeah.
Trump said that the Civil War might not have happened if Andrew Jackson were still around at the time.
Ugh.
This is the Trail of Tears, Andrew Jackson, the racist
motherfucker
who was against a national treasury.
This whole quote is just banana. I can't even unpack it. Andrew Jackson, no. No. Also, the Civil War, was because of slavery.
Yeah. What is he proposing that, we, you know what? I'm not going to unpack it.
It's just too dark.
Fucking stupid.
Too dark. Yeah, he also walked out of an interview after being asked about the Obama wiretap claims.
And it's so funny because Rachel Maddow had this whole section about how if you say the word Michael Flynn to him, he'll just freeze.
Really?
And just walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a reflex or something.
Yeah.
And then he also complained that Senate rules are, quote, unbelievably archaic. You're forced to make deals.
Yes. Yes. That's how it was designed.
P.S. That's how government in the United States works, and you're the fucking president. That was just this morning, guys.
And
I might have missed more things.
I will say it again. What a fucking baby.
You guys, someone needs to order this drunk man a Lyft and just send his ass home.
I'm going to put you in a Lyft. I'm going to send you home.
Please, do not run our country anymore.
Oh, God. Okay, so let's move on to actual governance. What do you think?
Governance? Is that actually happening?
Is that a thing? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so we kind of referenced this before with the budget, but a deal on government funding has been reached, and we have avoided a shutdown.
Yeah. I would just like to say that it turns me on sexually that that Paul Ryan is having such a hard time with all of this, because Paul United Government fucking Ryan is like, we'll be able to do everything, and he can't even get a fucking budget bill passed.
Well, all the Beltway, you know, media types tell me he's such a policy wonk.
Oh my god,
with
yeah.
his PowerPoint presentations and rolled up sleeves.
Oh god.
Anyway, so they, you know, we have a bill to fund the government for the final 5 months of the fiscal year.
Right.
So last week, on Friday, Congress had passed, and Trump had signed into law, a one-week extension. So that's, we were able to keep negotiating.
Right.
So this, I think there's a lot of things in here that are wins for Democrats.
Absolutely.
So this is what the deal includes. An additional $12 billion in defense spending, so which is $18 billion less than Trump asked for.
I'll take it.
So, yeah, okay, we'll take that. A permanent fix to fund coal miners' health care instead of a temporary extension.
Take which, that, too.
Hi, coal miners, maybe you want to vote for Democrats.
Right? Just, who are fighting for this.
Yeah, FYI. But again, like Joy Reid said, this isn't about policy, this isn't about politics.
Right,
like,
does, yeah. Absolutely.
So another thing, instead of $3 billion for border security, which was requested by the Trump administration, the bill includes just half of that, so $1.5 million. And also,
no money for the wall.
we're gonna keep our day jobs as podcasters, but okay. I really like that.
You
too.
Like the song?
I did.
Yeah, I mean,
no hashtag money for the hashtag
fucking wall.
Yeah, at least yet.
Yeah.
There's also no budgetary cuts for quote sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
This bill also won't withhold subsidies to help lower income people buy health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, and also keeps funding for Planned Parenthood.
That was the one that Paul Ryan was like, that will never fucking happen.
Lols.
Yeah.
Lols. And then...
Paul Ryan, you are not Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah. Like, who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? Yeah. The House, you know, minority leader?
Fuck you.
No. And then per a senior congressional aide, and this is via Ben Jacobs, who's a reporter, the budget deal keeps 99% of EPA funding.
So basically, you know what? I'm really happy with this.
Yeah, well, because we have a story about the EPA that's shitty.
That's shitty.
But this is a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that the government is still functioning, sort of, should we talk about some other bullshit that Trump is pulling?
Yeah. Okay, so this one is really, really terrifying. This story is terrifying.
Yeah.
So Trump invited Rodrigo Duterte to the White House, and he is the president of the Philippines, and he's an authoritarian leader who is accused of ordering extrajudicial killings of drug suspects. And basically, you know, human rights groups all over the world are like, this guy is a fucking dictator.
Yeah, and I think The Hague is considering further action against him.
Yes, absolutely.
Well. Yeah, so a lot of Western governments have condemned Duterte for, you know, this bloody campaign. And it's like, okay, I wonder why this guy got an White House invite.
Why?
You know what's weird? And I'm sure this is purely coincidental.
Completely unrelated.
But there was a new billboard that popped up in promoting Trump Tower in Manila that features Ivanka Trump.
Right.
But I'm sure that's not related. That's not why the president of the Philippines would get a White House invite.
Yeah.
That's totally, you know, you guys, this is not normal.
I know.
And Ivanka is a White House advisor, and she's on a billboard advertising for Trump Tower for the Trump Tower in Manila, and now they've invited the fucking president of the Philippines, who is like...
Also,
an authoritarian, murderous dictator.
And also, just to add insult to injury, Duterte called Obama the son of a whore.
Right. I forgot about that. And people were like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just keep all that in mind.
Yeah. And just sort of for some extra context here, you know, this invite comes a week after Trump called to congratulate President Erdogan of Turkey for his victory in a disputed referendum that cemented his autocratic rule.
Right. And Trump also, you know, is very fond of the Egyptian leader who seized power during a military coup.
Yeah.
And, you know, Trump, this is also sort of on this vein.
Yeah, we're sort of weaving in some interrelated things here. Because we're getting a heavy sense of wannabe dictatorship from Trump.
Yeah. So, you know, so Trump has floated this idea of breaking up the Ninth Circuit, where 18 of the 25 judges were appointed by Democratic presidents, and which covers Arizona, California, Alaska, Nevada, Idaho, Oregon, Montana, Washington, Hawaii, and two U.S. territories.
Yeah, and this was sort of, you know, when he floated this quote-unquote idea, this was like sort of an extension of his Twitter tantrum after the sanctuary cities decision.
Right.
So, you know, that wasn't actually decided by the Ninth Circuit, but that would have been the next stop for Trump's order.
Right.
And that's also where portions of both of his Muslim bans were shot down.
Right, right. So he's obviously a little pissy.
Yeah, and we talked about this in a previous story, but Trump is like, what, I have to make deals?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, yeah, you can't just like willy-nilly, you can't act like a CEO and just do whatever the fuck you want. That's not how government works.
Yeah, also, you know, the independent judiciary, you know, that is a hallmark of democracy.
Right.
So
that is like literally the only thing kind of saving us.
Exactly.
Right now.
And so breaking up the Ninth Circuit, like getting rid of the independent judiciary, is terrifying.
Yeah. Another thing that happened this weekend that's sort of equally terrifying to me was, so Rentz Priebus, who's his chief of staff, he was on one of the Sunday shows and he said that the Trump administration has looked into changing libel laws.
Yeah.
And so he's sort of pointing to this frustration over stories that, you know, Priebus says have no basis in fact.
About
so things
Trump,
that
yeah.
Trump call fake news. And I will just say, I took it was a requirement for my major. I took a First Amendment in the Press class in college. The freedom of speech, you know, the First Amendment is so fucking strong in the United States, it is almost impossible to successfully sue for libel.
Yeah.
And it is sort of designed that way. Like, they want to overcorrect and make sure people aren't being clamped down on speech.
Right. Absolutely.
So, like, him wanting to change libel laws is sort of, or saying that they're looking into it, is saying that, like, we want to be able to successfully shut down and sue news organizations that are basically criticizing us.
Exactly.
Which is, you guys, this is an actual attack on freedom of speech. It's not the same thing as, like, when Ann Coulter has to cancel an appearance, okay?
That's not an attack on free speech.
Right. I heard Ann Coulter was getting death threats, which is not okay.
Not okay.
Not okay. So that's a whole other thing that I think needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, pulling out of a speech appearance, I mean, she can go stand on a Berkeley corner
And yell. That's free speech.
That's free speech.
Yeah.
Like, no one is required to give you a platform.
But you are allowed to say whatever you want to.
And that is something that is, we've talked about this before, it drives me bananas.
Me too.
But anyway, just a little tangent. But that is really, really creepy.
Yeah.
That he would even float this.
Well, and the thing is like a free press, which is essential to democracy, you know, and to break it down is just scary. And the norms that we enjoy are already eroding.
Right.
So the Secretary of State has already refused to stand up to foreign officials disrespecting our journalists.
Right.
He also refuses to travel with a press pool. Our official call readouts are laughable. So like when the president calls another president, both countries put out a readout of what happened. And ours, the ones that our government is putting out are like two sentences and
like written by kindergarten.
Yeah, and it basically says it was a productive call.
Yeah.
Well, the other country's readout is like two pages of analysis.
Right, right, right.
You know, White House visitor logs are no longer public information. Trump spends a significant amount of time at his resorts and does not inform the press pool of his activities while there.
Yeah, and he has spent at least 20% of his time at a golf resort.
Yeah, and just doesn't feel like the press needs to know about it. And then Trump, just not to put too fine a point on it, but he won't release his tax returns and we have no way to verify that there's no corruption.
Yeah, I mean, like, as we know, he is under FBI investigation for possible corruption and collusion.
Right.
So you know, speaking of that, we have a little Russia update.
Yeah, a little mini Russia update.
Mini Russia update, and it's a story out of The Guardian, so across the pond. It feels like it's a story that has flown below the radar.
A little bit, yeah.
So this story in The Guardian, so the UK government, so it's reporting that the UK government was given details last December of allegedly extensive contacts between the Trump campaign and Moscow. And this is according to court papers, because I believe Christopher Steele is being sued.
Sued, yes.
And it's because of this dossier.
Right.
So it confirms that Steele had provided his dossier to a, quote, senior UK government national security official acting in his official capacity.
Okay.
And Steele did so because it had implications for the national security of the U.S. and the U.K. And we've talked about this before.
Right.
The U.S. and U.K. intelligence services have a closer, more sort of quote-unquote special relationship.
Yeah, than pretty much any other country.
And he was like, this needs to be analyzed and further investigated and verified.
Yeah.
So this December memo that is being referred to in these court documents alleged that four Trump representatives traveled to Prague in August or September 2016 for, quote, secret discussions with Kremlin representatives and associated operators slash hackers about how to pay hackers secretly for penetrating Democratic Party computer systems and then, quote, a contingency plan for covering up operations. What? How is this not
a bigger story?
What?
Well, then also between March and September of that year, this memo alleges, the hackers used botnets and porn traffic to transmit viruses, plant bugs, and steal data online from Democratic Party leadership, which this is a pretty common tactic.
Right.
That's why their porn sites have this like sort of like, you know,
it's pop-up thing.
Yeah, and like the old joke is that it will give you viruses, but it actually will.
Right, right, right. And so the hackers were apparently paid by the Trump Organization, but were under control of Putin's presidential administration. So, like, if this is indeed true, this is what's in the court documents. What? That means that
the Trump
that this is collusion.
Paid. Trump paid,
right?
Yes, this is collusion. This like, is the definition.
If they find hard evidence of this, I mean, like, it could not be any more clear.
It could not.
People are acting like Rachel Maddow is this hysterical woman. I'm like, she's just following the trail.
She's like, literally just...
What? This is like... I know it sounds too wild to be true.
Right.
But it's not. These are our lives and our realities.
Well, and I like how Rachel Maddow put it, I think on Friday. She was like, whether it takes 100 days or 1,000, we're going to figure it the fuck out.
Yes, I'm paraphrasing, love that.
But that's what she said.
Yeah. And then also, just on this vein... you know, Trump was asked about Russian interference in elections, and he was asked by CBS, and he said, could have been China, could have been a lot of different groups. Like, U.S. intelligence has, like, come to a unanimous conclusion that it was Russia. Like, dude, like, you're either, like, too incompetent or you're in deep, or both.
Seriously.
Okay, so the last thing... you know, sort of speaking of internet data that we want to talk about is, you know, Devin, what what website did the Trump administration quietly scrub from the internet in the dead of night on Friday?
The EPA.
What?
Yeah, the EPA removed climate change information from its website after 20 years of having that information public.
So again, we talked about how, you know, the EPA is going to keep funding, but now its website is basically scrubbed from the internet.
So I'm just going to start...
Or the climate change info.
Right, the climate change. I'm going to start with a contender for the biggest piece of bullshit in the history of the world.
Right.
It's a quote from that the EPA put out.
Oh God.
Into this news. As EPA renews its commitment to human health and clean air, land, and water, our website needs to reflect the views of the leadership of the agency. We want to eliminate confusion by removing outdated language first and making room to discuss how we're protecting the environment and human health by partnering with states and working within the law.
What does that even mean?
It means nothing. It means they took this stuff out.
Eliminate confusion?
Yeah.
Sir, you are confused.
You are confused. So they basically took down several websites that, you know, included detailed data on climate change and other scientific findings. It's not just climate change. And, you know, most of the information they removed was actually in direct conflict with Scott Pruitt, the head of the agency's views and statements on climate change. So they're basically saying, like, Scott Pruitt is the one who knows what he's talking about.
Well, I'm sure if Hillary Clinton were president... her, you know, head of the EPA would do the same thing.
Oh, duh.
They're the same.
They're the same. It's the same.
For sure.
And the thing is like, overhauling websites at the change of a new administration is not unusual.
Right.
But it generally, you just change the policy pages. Like, this is our policy, this is where we're going with it. And you don't remove data. You don't take away information that was publicly available.
Right.
And the agency basically is trying to say that they removed the data because it's, quote, out of date, to which I say, fuck you.
Yeah, and this comes on the heels of over 200,000 people marching for climate this weekend.
So again, I say, fuck you. Okay, Sarah, so talking about, you know, the EPA kind of transitions nicely into this next block, which we want to discuss the article that known climate denier Bret Stephens put in New York Times, his first column.
Yes, so we had talked about his hire previously in the podcast, and he just put out his first column in the last couple of days, and... Oh boy. There is so much to unpack here. So the actual column is fucking garbage.
It's garbage. I mean, it's not...
Again, it's not keeping people up to date. There's nothing contrarian about this.
That's the thing. It doesn't actually add anything to the discussion.
Yeah, so like the actual column, like he like compared climate change data to the Clinton campaign's internal polling errors, and that's just not how science works.
Yeah.
That's not a good comparison.
Right. It's called a false
Equivalence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, people are trying to bill Bret Stephens as this contrarian thinker, but climate change denial is not a point of view worth considering. It is a flagrant lie.
Yeah. And, you know, Nate Silver tweeted, quote, "There's nothing conservative or liberal about the Stevens column. The issue is about evidence versus bullshit."
Yep.
He just doesn't know the subject.
Right. And I loved what Apocalypta Now on Twitter tweeted. She said, "The right exploits liberals' absurd devotion to fair play in order to expand the bounds of acceptable ideas. Liberals fall for it constantly." And I was just like fist pumping when I saw that, because I feel like this extends into politics as well.
It does, in general.
And we've talked about how, you know, Democrats are sort of conceding their own strengths and saying, oh, we have to reach out to Trump voters who are honestly not really worth, like, trying to win over.
Right. And then
I just feel like, you know, what Apocalypta Now says, you know, I saw this analogy after the election. It's like the Republicans and the Democrats have sat down to play cards.
Right.
And then the Republicans set the house on fire, but the Democrats are still playing cards.
Yeah.
Like, we can't always play by the rules of the game, because we're just going to be self-defeating.
Absolutely. Right? And Erica Alexander was on AM Joy.
Oh, I loved this quote.
This was amazing. She said, quote, "With all due respect to Michelle Obama, when they go low, we bury them."
Right. So it's like, again, like, we don't, as liberal people, we don't have to, like, pretend like we're playing on an equal playing field.
Right.
Or that ideas are equally worth discussing. Like, climate change denial, like,
not a thing.
That's just a flagrant lie.
It's just not a thing.
And also, it shouldn't be, like, the search for truth should not be seen as partisan.
Right.
Right? Like, it shouldn't, if it's seen as liberal, then that tells me more about conservative ideology than anything else.
Absolutely.
It doesn't say anything about liberal ideology.
Right. And I talked about it a little bit on our last podcast. Right. Bill Nye was on CNN and basically pissed that they had a climate denier on.
Right.
But yeah, so science has always been married to politics insofar that, like, research funding and research grants and where that money goes and how much is all very political.
And there's a lot of things too, like, science isn't always objective. There's plenty of ways that science has discriminated against groups.
Right. And it also
and exploited groups.
Right. And also personal bias, like, the scientist always has a point of view.
Right.
And that it comes through in experiment design and findings, all of that.
Sure.
And that's all fine. But the thing is that overall, the search for truth in science, and this is why I keep picking scientific things for my gratitude check, like finding new planets.
Sure.
Because the sort of expanding what we're looking for and the larger truths, like, that is apolitical.
Well, the thing is with climate is there is such a consensus from scientists that it feels like an undeniable truth.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, it's like gravity is technically a theory.
Right.
It technically, you could say, like, I don't believe in gravity because
but you don't live on this planet.
Right. Exactly.
Like, literally. So let's talk about some of the blowback.
Yes.
Because there were a lot of people who were talking about unsubscribing, and then the New York Times, there were staff members who were sort of being patronizing and reacting to that. So, like, of course, this hiring of Stevens and, like, the trash in his first column pushed people to cancel their subscriptions. And it might not, this column in and of itself might not have been the only thing. I think
a lot
of people, it was a last straw.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, did white dudes in the media have some takes.
Oh man, they, like, shit their pants.
Yeah. So the New York Times deputy Washington editor Jonathan Wiseman called it a, quote, liberal embarrassment.
Okay, no. Hiring a climate denier is an embarrassment.
Yeah, like, no. You don't get to project your mortification onto us.
Exactly.
Like, no. And then Max Boot, who's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, tweeted, "Readers canceling the New York Times because of Bret Stephens are a mirror image of Breitbarters. They don't want debate. They want their prejudices confirmed." It's like, yeah, because outright bigotry is definitely the same as believing in science.
And honestly, these white dudes are going to both sides us to death.
Like, yeah. Have we learned nothing from 2016?
It's like they were all dead in 2016 and just didn't get any of the memos.
They woke up on January 1st, 2017 as if 2016.
And they're like, both sides.
Never happened.
Like, shut up.
I know. And then there was Dylan Byers, who's a CNN reporter. He said, "All critiques are more than welcome. Canceling your subscription to the paper of record or calling for a firing is something else entirely." And for me, this just really speaks to white male entitlement.
It's so entitled.
Like, do white men seriously not realize that actions sometimes have consequences?
Yeah. And I mean, Imani Gandhi tweet.
Yeah, she's one of our faves. She's at Angry Black Lady on Twitter.
Love it. She tweeted, quote, "No one is required to subscribe to your goddamn newspaper. If people don't like the content you offer, they tell you so with their wallet."
Yes. I mean, and we've talked about this before, like, not to put too fine a point on it, but if you, like, you don't owe businesses your money if you are no longer satisfied with their product. Like, this is a capitalistic society, and how you spend your money is a powerful way to signal your dissatisfaction and push for change.
It's like, a big, big part of free speech in this country.
So this, like, guy, Dylan Byers, and other people like him saying, oh, you can't cancel your New York Times subscription. It's like, the fuck yes I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just for the record, Devin and I have kept our New York Times subscription. Yes. I just want to say I understand why other people have it.
Absolutely.
I still find value in a lot of their other sections, but I am teetering on the edge.
Although we've talked about this before. When New York Times sticks to reporting and giving context and, like, the facts, they're excellent.
So good.
They're so excellent. It's when they get into shit like this where they really just fuck up all over the place.
Yeah. And I just, like, along this vein of, like media dudes being like, you shouldn't be canceling your New York Times subscriptions. Like, can we talk about how some of these same people are saying that Obama shouldn't accept speech money that people are offering him?
But we gotta, like, throw our, like, dollar bills at the New York Times.
So Obama is not entitled to money that people offered him, but also the New York Times is entitled to our money. Like, I'm sorry. There's a lot of mental gymnastics there for me.
You need to get the fuck out.
Yeah. Also, the New York Times had some other really embarrassing stories this weekend. I just couldn't. So one headline read in the paper edition, the print edition, I think they changed it on the online site. It said, quote, "Remaking the presidency, Trump has changed too." And then the subheadline was, "Expanding power and shunning norms, yet adapting to realities after 100 days.
What does that even fucking mean?
What?
Someone explain that to me.
Also, shunning norms, quote unquote, is just, like, a hell of a euphemism for open bigotry, attacking the press in the courts, emoluments and ethics violations, endless golf trips, and, oh yeah, possible collusion with a foreign power.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's like, shunning norms would be like, you know, the president,
like, not wearing a suit.
Yeah, right? Like, the president wears khakis to the office. That is shunning a norm.
Which I think Obama wore khakis once, and people
shit all over it. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's a norm where I'd be like, whatever. You want to do casual Fridays? Like,
cool.
Like, that's go crazy. Fine. Yeah. You know?
But and Sarah Kensier had a great tweet about this. About this sort of newspaper. She said, "Oh my fucking God. Trump has not changed. He has not changed in 40 years. Trump got sidelined by checks and balances and is now trying to bulldoze them."
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So there was another headline.
Oh God, I think this one is the most offensive.
This one raised my blood pressure.
Yes.
It was the upside to the presidential Twitter feed.
What?
Okay, some people know this. We put it on our like about page, but we almost named this podcast Coke-Induced Twitter Raid after a certain someone who may or may not stay up until 3 a.m. tweeting.
Right. We don't know if he is on any substances. It just feels
like it.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly. And so a great quote was, "Even a stopped clock is right twice a day, though, and even Donald Trump can't be wrong all the time. With that in mind, we're looking for a few positive words about the president, and we're going to ask for your help."
Okay, what?
No.
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 We're not going to say anything nice about this motherfucker.
No.
Also, no one asks people to say nice things about Barack Obama, who's one of the best presidents of our era of maybe
modern history.
History.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And also, like the New York Times soliciting, like, positive, like, sentiment for Trump is, like, it just feels icky.
It feels like a normalization of so many awful things he's done. And so they tried to, like, spin his Twitter feed as a positive. They said, "President Barack Obama tweeted or had someone tweet on his behalf, but he never embraced the idea as Mr. Trump has. So that's one good thing he has done for the country." I would beg to differ. I am scared shitless of his Twitter feed.
We do not need the president tweeting out, like, his emotions and the filterless thoughts.
Yeah. So they're like, "Can you think of, like, other things? Like, please let me know at somethingnice@nytimes.com. We'll be revisiting this theme regularly in Sunday Review."
What the fuck?
No, we don't need this. This is not, again, you guys, the Fourth Estate is not going to save us. Not going to save us. And then there was one more terrible column, just for good measure. And it was, quote, "Is there a case for Le Pen?"
Okay, look, don't read it. Yeah. It's not worth your time. It's just another white guy not taking bigotry seriously.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, the situation in France, no.
And then, like, in a, like, hold my beer moment,
yeah.
The Boston Globe tweeted out this article, and then they deleted it, but this story is still up. Quote, can white power groups get past old differences and build lasting alliances?
What? I wish you could see my face right now.
It's just like, what is happening? What the fuck is even happening?
Well, and then the Washington Post published an op-ed from Trump called, in my first 100 days, I kept my promise to Americans.
No, no. You kept none of your promises.
You literally did none of that.
How do we make this stop?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we should email something nice nytimes.com.
I'm going to call him a Lyft and then escort him back to Florida forever.
That's so nice.
And so that's something nice that's something I could do nice. For Trump and the country.
And the country.
The last thing we want to talk about in relation to the New York Times hiring Brett Stevens and all this bullshit around it. The New York Times sort of defended this hire with a sort of diversity of thought, quote unquote, right. argument. I just want to point out this paper of record, so to speak, has never fucking hired a woman of color to be an opinion columnist.
Right. So diversity of thought, they're not really talking about diversity. They're talking about a bunch of white dudes.
Well, I feel like white dudes are always rationalizing their shitty decisions with diversity of thought when right. they've not achieved actual fucking diversity and inclusion.
Right, right.
Like, you know, there's no actual diversity being achieved.
Well, Sarah Kuhn, when we talked to her, had right. a lot of really interesting things to say about that.
Yes.
Which was basically like, you know, diversity doesn't mean just telling stories about different groups of people. It's about having different groups of people tell stories.
Right, right.
And it sounds like there's not a big difference, but it's all the difference in the world.
100%. Leah Finnegan, she wrote a great piece in the outline about this. She said, quote, political diversity in 2017, unfortunately, means ensuring that bad opinions proliferate despite overwhelming facts that they are wrong. Political diversity is not hiring a white male conservative to your roster of op-ed columnists that already include 2 to 3 white male conservatives, depending on if David Brooks has taken any allergy medication that day.
Burn.
Yeah, and then like, weirdly, so David Leonhardt, who I actually, there's a couple of columns he's written that I've liked. He's mm-hmm. another New York Times op-ed columnist. He wrote a column that was kind of a subtweet of this.
Yeah.
He said, or like, they were sort of trying to sound like they were taking steps.
Yeah.
It's called Men Invent, Women Transcribe. And he said, quote, opinion journalism remains mostly male.
Right.
Virtually every national publication, including the New York Times, can do better.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. If only the New York Times had the power to hire someone instead of a fucking climate denier.
Well, yeah. And, you know, maybe do that instead of bitching about subscriptions.
Yeah. And just FYI, Brett Stevens also has some truly atrocious views on torture, Muslims, equality, sexual assault, institutional racism, Black Lives Matter, and among other things. So he's not only just a climate denying dickwad, he's just a fucking dickwad.
He's just a fucking dickwad. And, you know, this is just to remind everyone about the overwhelming whiteness mm-hmm. of news media and political commentary in general, which is 65 to 90% white men, depending on the format.
Yeah. So maybe don't focus on, quote, diversity of thought. Maybe actually hire people that include a diverse roster of actual inclusion, actual diversity. Just a thought. I'm just a woman, though, so I wouldn't. I just my lady brain.
Sometimes can't handle it. Yeah. This is a problem, and this is something that we need to start tackling.
Right.
And pushing back on.
So if people are canceling their fucking subscriptions, then like take a fucking hike.
Yeah. Exactly. Like please.
Yeah. Cry me a river elsewhere.
Exactly. And honestly, this is where like kind of our listener feedback comes in. Like, may you have the confidence to push back against the mansplainers and dickwads.
Yep.
Okay, Sarah needed an emotional second after that. We had to pause.
I was like, I need to get into my yoga breath.
Yeah. So now we do everyone's favorite gratitude check. So Sarah, what are you grateful for?
So the first thing I'm grateful for is the actual White House Correspondents' Dinner and the not White House Correspondents' Dinner, but specifically the comedians
yes.
that led them.
Yes.
So Hasan Minhaj had great jokes. And by the way, he's a UC Davis alum.
Yes, he is. That? I did know that.
Yeah, so just for you.
I know.
He did have some like low-key sexist digs at yeah. Rachel Maddow that I wasn't happy with, but he had other really, really great jokes. So just a couple of them. He said, no one wanted to do this gig, so of course it lands in the hands of an immigrant, which I just feel like is
so
such such good. A biting commentary.
It is.
And then he said to the press, when one of you messes up, Trump blames your entire group. And now you know what it feels like to be a minority. And then he also did a great, like, Steve Bannon bit. He's uh-huh. like, is Steve Bannon here? I do not see Steve Bannon.
That was
like,
good.
Nazi.
I do love a good pun.
Yeah, we do love a good pun. He also ended with an impassioned dialogue about the importance of the First Amendment. He said, only in America can a first-generation Indian-American Muslim kid get on the stage and make fun of the president.
I mean, that's true. And it's wonderful. True.
And the president didn't show up because he's a thin-skinned man-child.
Man-child baby.
Yeah. And then Samantha did a really funny show called the Not White House Correspondents' Dinner, which mm-hmm. I think she had prepared because... sort of to like go up against the White House yeah. Correspondents' Dinner for Trump. It also benefited the Committee to Protect Journalists. So there was a lot of great bits in there. Allison Janney was CJ Craig. Oh. She like revived her CJ Craig role.
Be still my beating heart.
Yeah. Or Allison Janney. Will Ferrell was also revived an old role as George W. Bush. Samantha Bee, I think my favorite joke that night was CNN gives you news like your shitty boyfriend gives you orgasms.
Yeah. Yeah.
She also imagined the world in which Hillary was president and sort of like, you know, the Netflix show Man in yes. the High Castle. So yeah. it's called Woman yeah. in the High Castle. And the whole thing was just an LOL sob.
Moment.
Just like, I
yes,
couldn't.
It really was.
Too much. But anyway, I just love, you know, comedians and their sort of set. Like, there was a great Vox piece about how satire gets to truth, like, better than a lot of news outlets are. And I think yeah. that's a really important.
Yeah, it cuts through the bullshit.
It cuts through the bullshit. So the second thing I'm grateful for is Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe said he has broken the U.S. record for restoring voting rights.
Yes.
So he's restored voting rights to 156,221 Virginians, which is surpassing the previous record holder, which was from Charlie Crist, who was the governor of Florida. As the governor of Florida, he restored 155,315 voting rights to felons from 2007 to 2011. McAuliffe said, quote, expanding democracy in Virginia has been my proudest achievement during my time as governor.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to give it extra context, meanwhile, Nebraska's Republican governor rejected a push to restore voting rights to felons and by vetoing a bipartisan measure that would have done so.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we need to be focusing on as a party.
Yep. So state and local elections, they
sexy.
Matter.
They're sexy.
They're sexy. They matter. Okay, so the last thing I'm grateful for, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a scientific study that found certain female dragonflies fake sudden death to avoid male advances, which I'm just like, oh my God. Like,
yes.
I was like, how do I replicate this?
You guys, I totally got Sarah on the animal gratitude check train.
Yes. So this... scientist Raseem Khalifa from the University of Zurich, he watched a female crash dive to the ground while being pursued by a male, which I just want to see recreated in bars.
Please.
Like, just crash diving. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
I just love that, like, in 2017, like, even female dragonflies are sick of men's bullshit.
Middle fingers on middle fingers on middle fingers!
Yeah, and just, like, these dragonflies are just like, I'm just gonna fake death.
Yes.
Like, I'm not even gonna be subtle here. So those are the things I'm grateful for this week that just were good stories. Okay, so how about you, Devin?
So, first thing is Ruth Bader Ginsburg has a tote with her face on it. And on the other side, it says, I dissent.
Yes!
Because, of course it does. And she's the baddest bitch who's ever lived.
I want to, like, get to that level of, like,
I would, like,
amazingness where I can just, like, unironically, like, carry a tote with my face on
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And also, I want that tote, like, immediately.
Immediately.
So that's a fun one. My next one is actually related to sort of what we talked about our last podcast about Trump asking for a review of national...
Right. National lands.
National lands. So Patagonia... threatens to sue Trump over the National Monument Review.
Yes, I saw this.
Yeah, so they basically said, don't fuck with us, we fucking see you.
Yes.
And they believe that this move by Trump is an attempt to cater to the fossil fuel lobby, who cannot drill for resources on federally protected land. So Patagonia said it would, quote, fight with everyone it has to in order to preserve the Obama administration's designation of tribal lands to form Bears Ears National Monument in Utah.
Yes.
They are not fucking around.
I love that.
Also, Patagonia, this past Black Friday, they donated 100% of their sales to grassroots nonprofits who work to protect the environment. They donated over $10 million.
Wow.
And it's sad that private companies are ready to step up and do the work that the fucking EPA should be doing.
But here we are.
But here we are in 2017.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Patagonia.
All right.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And my last thing is, so we've talked about how awesome Teen Vogue is.
Yes.
And how they've been, like, just on it, like, politically and culturally. And
leading the resistance and just leading in just really great, rich stories.
Yes. So Teen Vogue appoints Elaine Weltroth as editor-in-chief.
Yeah, I thought she was already editor-in-chief, but I think they've made this official.
Yeah, so she was the editor after their previous editor-in-chief stepped down.
Right.
And then there was she worked with the digital editor. So, but now she's been promoted to the official editor-in-chief.
Yeah.
She's the one who kind of steered Teen Vogue to be, like, more politically and culturally aware. And, you know, they've been putting out some of the most on-point political analysis of the news media. And so she's tasked with expanding Teen Vogue's presence, and she'll also be overseeing Allure as well, to sort of bring them all into this, like, creative vision.
She's also really young, too. Like,
she's really young.
She's, I think, just a couple years older than us, if that. Like, so she's doing things.
Yeah. She started her career as the style and beauty editor of Ebony. And, you know, she also, under her, Lauren Duca was the one who wrote the piece entitled Donald Trump is Gaslighting America.
Yeah, that super viral piece.
Right. That brought Teen Vogue's daily web traffic to an all-time high of 9.2 million unique views, compared to 3 million views last year.
So she is producing results. She's putting out really, she's overseeing a team that's putting out content that people really truly want to see, and that is and she's producing results.
And this is what fucking happens when you put a woman of color or a person of color or hell, just a fucking woman in charge of things.
Yeah.
Like, things, good things happen.
Especially a woman of color.
Especially a woman of color in this kind of position where she's like, I see you.
Yes, I will prioritize these types of stories and I'll make sure that there are appropriate people telling them.
Okay, Sarah, let's award the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery. We have a couple of honorable mentions.
Dishonorable mentions.
Oh, good point. Dishonorable mentions.
Yeah, so our first dishonorable mention is the New York Times for reasons we have previously talked about. And there was a great blog post from Oliver Willis that we'll link to on the website that just says it all for me.
Next, Yale Republicans held a barbecue in front of a hunger strike that was staged by graduate teachers. So basically, they're protesting because Yale won't let them form a union. And in a very classy move, the Republican Club had a barbecue. And a reporter who was trying to get a comment from the young Republican group was removed from the area by campus police.
Yeah, so Republicans and Democrats are not the same.
Nope.
And don't let anyone fucking tell you otherwise.
Nope.
Our next dishonorable mention is there was a story, I don't know if you guys saw this, but two members of the alt-right were given press passes, and then they took a picture in the briefing room making white supremacist hand signs.
Yeah, this is really fucking classy, too.
So Mike Cernovich, who we've talked about before, who, like, threatened if Steve Bannon was ousted to, like, unload dirt on the Trump administration. And then this woman named Cassandra Fairbanks, who was, she's a freelance journalist.
No, Cernovich is a freelance.
Cernovich is a freelance journalist. And then Fairbanks works for, wait for it, Sputnik, which is a Russian outlet.
Yes, it's one of the Russian government-controlled outlets.
The weird thing about her is that she was, like, a hardcore Bernie supporter in the primary, and then she switched to Trump. So, like, I can't tell if this is the horseshoe theory of politics or she's, like, a Russian plant.
I mean, why not both?
Yeah, I mean, it could be both.
It's always both, guys.
But, so she tried to say that the signal that they were doing was not a white supremacist hand signal, but the Anti-Defamation League characterized this as a racist hand sign. So, like, you can't, like, wink nod to the white supremacist and then say, oh, no, this isn't what's happening.
Right, right. And also, Milo Douchewad Dickwad is fond of this hand signal.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he is. So, yeah, they're dickwads for obvious reasons.
Yes. And then our dishonorable winner.
Yeah. We had a hard time picking, honestly.
We did. Is a guy named Robert Fisher. He's a New Hampshire representative, and he was identified as the person who created the Red Pill subreddit.
Which is basically, from what I understand, kind of like a quote-unquote men's rights activist.
Yes.
And like pickup artist thing, which is like basically a fancy way of saying dickwad.
Yeah. That's, yeah. So there's a long and fascinating story about how a dude gets dumped and then decides to commit himself to pickup artistry. And he's like the archetypal nice guy.
And for those who don't know what pickup artistry it is a very, very manipulative sort of practice that it very much is abusive towards women.
Yes, absolutely.
And really creepy.
Yes, and to like have sex with them.
It
like,
basically
that's the goal.
Tricks women or
that's the
coerces
idea.
Them, tricks them into having sex.
Yeah, and so basically the Red Pillars, which has ballooned to 83,000 readers. It's a huge group. It's a huge subreddit, which is disgusting. But basically, it laments that all women are manipulative and will threaten to cry rape if they want a guy to do something.
Which, by the way, like, you know, manipulating women and doing that, that's like sexual assault.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not even trying to get them to have sex. It's sexual assault.
Right. And so Fisher reported...
But we're the fucking lying whores,
right? Who will cry rape at a drop of a hat.
Right.
Robert Fisher reportedly videotapes his sexual encounters so the women can't accuse him of rape.
Oh my God.
And as a representative, he's proposed legislation that's designed to flag false rape allegations and keep men, innocent men, out of prison.
You guys... Oh my God. This guy is a state representative in the state of New Hampshire.
Yeah.
He is in government.
Yes.
Again, this is why when people are like, oh, you're only voting for her because she's a woman. I'm like, you know what? Part of me is.
Yeah.
Like, and if she's liberal and she's competent and I have a chance to vote for a woman and she aligns with me, I'm going to, because there's too many dickwads.
There's too many dickwads. And so basically, Red Pillars, this group, the Red Pill, they believe that the crying rape for attention is just a matter-of-fact element of the feminist agenda.
Oh my God.
I would also like to say this dude is in a shitty band consisting only of himself, and I feel like you could have inferred that information from the above information, but...
Just that.
Just wanted to point that out.
Is he still in office?
He is still in office.
So this is, again, this is male privilege on display. He created this creepy-ass fucking subreddit...
About rape.
And he's still in office.
Yeah. So, fuck you, dickwads.
Hey Devin, so this is a sort of a new mini blog that we wanted to put in, and like we said, we've weaved this in before, but we want to do action items at the end of the shows when we're able to.
Right.
So what are some things that we want people to keep on their radars and to act upon?
Right. So first up is Topher Spiro, who worked on the Affordable Care Act in the Obama administration, said, quote, "This is a red alert. Pence is calling moderates and telling them that they have the votes. Only a tidal wave of calls can stop them. Call your reps."
Yeah, and this is in regards to the new sort of healthcare bill.
Yes.
I've seen some stuff this morning that they might not have the votes, but still, keep calling
Just
your
keep
reps.
Keep calling.
Flood their phones. Like, we have to protect healthcare.
Absolutely.
And then the next thing I think we want to talk about, so Samuel Sinyangwe of Campaign Zero. So he had a really great thread over the weekend. He said, quote, "Much of Trump's agenda in Congress has been blocked these past 100 days, but his agenda has moved forward through state legislators."
Mm-hmm.
So he gave a couple of examples. So like while the court blocked Trump's sanctuary city ban, Mississippi and Georgia just signed similar bans into law.
Right.
Texas, Indiana, Florida, and Louisiana look to be next.
Right. So the GOP Congress failed to defund Planned Parenthood in the budget bill, but six states at least passed laws restricting reproductive rights in the past 100 days.
Yep. Arizona, North Dakota, West Virginia passed laws in the past 100 days, making it harder to vote. Georgia is likely next. 23 states are considering, and we talked about this in my gratitude check.
Yeah.
Virginia expanded restored voting rights, and Nebraska rejected it, so keep that in mind.
Right.
Momentum has also slowed in state legislators to address police violence, and meanwhile, 14 states are considering bills to criminalize protesters, which we've talked about before, too.
Yes. Senate Democrats have the filibuster to stop Trump's federal agenda, but only 13 states have a filibuster, some with GOP filibuster-proof majorities.
Yes. So, in other words, like Samuel said, Trump's domestic agenda will be overwhelmingly decided in state legislators, not in Congress. So fight there too. And we've talked about this tool before. It's really great. It's called ourstates.org. So OURstates.org. This is a tool that shows you can click on your state and click on certain issue topics and see what bills are being considered.
Yes.
And so call your state reps. They really don't get a lot of calls.
Yeah, and state politics are sexy.
Yeah.
And then last, Representative Ileana Rose-Lithian is a Republican, and she's retiring from Congress.
Yes.
So this is a Southern Florida district that Hillary won by 20 points in the last election.
Yeah.
So this could be a great pickup for Democrats in the House. Just keep your eyes out.
Yeah, and I think also Rubio didn't do well in this district.
No, he didn't.
Either. So this is really a district that could very easily turn Democrat. So Swing Left and Flippable are great organizations to support and volunteer for. And just if you live in Virginia, the Democratic primary for governor is in June.
It's in June, so keep your eyes open. Okay, guys, I think that's it for us.
Wow. Yeah. We packed in a lot, as
we
usually do. Let us know how you feel about this slightly new format.
Yep.
And we will see you either on Patreon and or on Thursday.
Yes. Thank you guys for listening. For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we've discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter at HellbentPod. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/hellbentpodcast. You can follow Devin on Twitter at Devin Handy, and you can follow Sarah on Twitter at Sarah Lerner.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent. And there are lots of other fun rewards for higher levels of patronage, including a monthly Skype session with Devin and Sarah.
And for that one, drinking is optional.
Optional.
Quote unquote. Quote.